in 5 weeks early because I developed preeclampsia. And so he spent a couple of weeks in the NICU. So that was very stressful. But he is doing great, and I'm doing well, so I feel fully recovered. We just had an amazing experience at Peace Health, their family birth center and their NICU. I mean, they're so amazing. We could not have asked for better care. So we're just really grateful for
That's really hard to go through. That's hard to go through having your baby in NICU. That's not
That was hard. It was very hard.
How much did he weigh at birth, Aru?
He was 4 pounds and 14 ounces.
Pretty little, yeah.
He was tiny. But you know, he's more than made up for it. He's in the 63rd percentile
huge.
Now. So.
Wow. He's big. He looks so healthy.
So he's doing great, which is a huge relief. But yeah,
that'd be incredibly scary. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, thank you. But we're, again, just so grateful for the care me and Archie received at Peace Health. Like, I cannot say enough good things about their family birth center and their NICU. I mean, they are amazing at what they do. So we're just feeling very grateful that we all got out of that experience, you know, healthy.
Well, he's beautiful.
Thank you, Peggy.
All right. Well, it's according to my clock, but I don't know if it's right or not. We're just talking about all the clocks are different in the world. It's 5:34, so maybe we should get started because we do have a pretty full agenda and robust discussions for this evening. So welcome, everybody, to our May meeting. I hope everyone has been enjoying this nice sunny weather that we've been having the last bit. The last meeting, we were complaining about the rain, so we've got a little bit of sun now. So we have a new member tonight, and Alan, would you like to introduce Ashley?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to introduce Ashley Mariscal. She is our new youth representative, and she's a senior attending Henrietta Lacks Health and Bioscience High School, and she expressed a really strong interest in being on FAC, and she already has a strong interest and commitment of public health, as well as healthcare and healthcare access and equity. So she already knows a lot of public health. She's completed coursework in epidemiology, as well as in law and ethics in medicine. And she's participated in clubs that promote community outreach. And in addition, she was social chair of the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers while in high school. And she's provided outreach and opportunities for Hispanic community members interested in STEM fields. So Public Health Advisory Council Executive Committee, and we reviewed her application. We're thrilled at the strength of our application, and of course the Board of Health formally appointed her. So Ashley is here. I don't, Ashley, if you want to say anything or introduce yourself.
I mean, I feel like you pretty much said it all, but thank you guys so much for allowing me to be here.
Welcome, Ashley. It's good to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
She's also got an interest in nursing and potentially public health nursing as well, in addition to everything else.
Well, we're really happy to have you here tonight, Ashley.
Oh, thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and do the roll call. And I'm going to add something new to the roll call tonight. It's not going to add a lot to the agenda. But when I call your name, instead of saying here or present, I'd like to have you tell me what your favorite beverage is when it's been warm outside.
Hey, Sandy, could we also have folks just give a brief introduction, if there's time, so Ashley can know who they are?
Sure, yeah. So when I call your name, if you'll tell us who you represent on FAP, and then your favorite beverage for the hot weather. All right, let's start with Elma Blue. Okay, I'm Sandy Brown, and one of my favorite, and I represent Consumer Public Health Services, and I serve as the chair of FAC for this year. And my favorite beverage for hot weather is an Arnold Palmer, which is a mixture of lemonade and iced tea over lots of ice. Okay, next is Nisa Buchanan.
Hey everyone, my name's Nisa. Ashley, welcome. It's great to have you on board. I am the nurse representative for FAC, and I'm relatively new also. And I can't figure out how to get my phone off safe driving mode, so I can't share my screen. A little not very technologically savvy, but my favorite beverage for the hot weather is iced coffee.
Okay, great. Shauna Carter.
Hi, my name is Shauna Carter. I'm the Director of Partner Engagement for the Black Future Co-op Fund. I represent the community organization. My favorite beverage for the cold weather is actually sparkling water.
Great. Peggy Carlson.
Hey, Ashley. Welcome to FAC. I'm Peggy Carlson. I work for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which is our state child welfare agency. I work at headquarters as their education program administrator, and I am the educational representative on this committee, council, whatever we are. And I'm afraid to say this because I feel like it's not a good thing to say in fact, but you know what I've been drinking are bangs, which are, I know Ashley knows what it is. Probably the old people don't, but and I know I shouldn't be drinking them, but lately I've been really enjoying them. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Peggy. Paul Childers.
You're on mute, Paul.
You're on mute, Paul.
Now can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? Thank you. And we've got an echo.
You, because I think you're on in two different places. I see your name in two different places. That's probably why the echo is there.
Okay.
You've logged on twice, I think.
Yeah.
We'll come back to you, Paul. Next is Tyler Clary.
Yeah, hi, my name is Tyler Clary, and I represent drinking water utilities for Clark County. And since I represent drinking water utilities, I'm going to have to just go with a nice cold glass of water as my preferred drink.
Okay, great. Mark Collier. Don't see Mark tonight. Heather Decker.
Hi, I'm Heather Decker, and I work for Legacy Salmon Creek Medical Center as a quality improvement program consultant. And I agree with you, Sandra. My favorite drink is an Arnold Palmer, too.
Okay, good. Remy Youssef. I don't see Remy here tonight. Dave Fuller. No, Dave, as well. Sarah Garber.
Hello, good evening. I'm Sarah Garber. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Peace Health Southwest and represent Peace Health Southwest. I'm also an anesthesiologist, and I'm going to go with Tyler. I enjoy a big glass of ice water when it gets hot outside.
Okay, great. Amy Gross. Amy? Don't see Amy. Ashley.
Sorry, I was on mute, but I feel like mine would be a nice tall glass of hibiscus tea.
Iced or hot? Iced?
Yes, super okay. Yummy.
All right. Sue Marshall.
Hi, I'm Sue Marshall. I'm on the county council and have a farm out here in Ridgefield. And, not all the time, but sometimes I like a nice gin and tonic with extra lime, so I guess that would make it a little more nutritious.
Great. Dr. Melnick.
Hi, Alan Melnick. I'm the public health director and health officer and ex officio member, and I'm going to go along with Tyler, Sarah, and Shona and go for ice water, and it could be either sparkling or regular, but ice water works for me.
Jeff Morey.
Good evening, everybody. Jeff Morey, I'm the Vancouver Police Chief, and I am a ice cold sparkling water guy when it's hot.
Marla Sanger.
You're muted, Marla.
I'm working on it. Okay, I think I'm audible now.
Here you
go. So I am a member of FAC in the category of a community member that's receiving public health services, which all of our community does, and feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to do that. And welcome, Ashley. We're so happy that you decided to join us. I'm going to also echo the others that talked about our Bounty water. It is amazingly good water. I love it, especially on ice. I get to spend time in Southeast Alaska where the water is as good as it could ever be. And I would say what we have right here in Clark County is equal to that wonderful goodness. So,
thanks, thank Marla. You. Michelle Stickley. Michelle's not here yet. Maria Swinger Inske. Aru.
I'm Arun Dorothy Hedrick, and welcome, Ashley, and I represent physicians in Clark County. This is going to sound really odd, but my favorite drink any time of the year is a hot chocolate.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Michael Watkins.
Hi, Ashley. I'm Michael Watkins. I'm an enrolled Rosebud Sioux Tribal member, and I'm the Tribal Manager, Executive Director of Health and Human Services for the Cowlitz Indian Tribe. And I would say just a plain lemonade.
Okay, good. All right, what about Roxanne?
Okay, hi, Ashley. I'm Roxanne Wolf. I'm the Deputy Director for Public Health. And I was going to say Pontini, but I don't know if that's particularly appropriate. So I'm going to go with water. I'll just go with water. We'll just keep it at that. Welcome, Ashley.
I'm sure we all have more than one favorite cold beverage.
All right.
Haley.
Hi, welcome, Ashley. I'm Haley Pickus. I'm a policy analyst with Public Health and along the theme of water, but I really prefer it from like a stainless steel water bottle, so it's nice.
Jeff.
Jeff Harbison, Administrative Services Director. Hot day. Ice, very, very cold ice water. Very cold.
Okay. And let's see, Andrea, did we call on you?
No, I'm in transit right now. So, good evening. No worries. Hi. I'm Andrea Pruitt. I'm the community health director. I use she, her pronouns. And I would say my go-to hot weather drink is iced coffee with heavy cream.
Alrighty. Okay, is there anybody I've missed?
Am I?
Hi. Oh, Paul.
I want I represent the restaurants in Southwest Washington, and I drink vitamin water pretty much all the time.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul. Sorry, I forgot to come back. Alrighty. Oh, Mallory, I forgot you. Sorry.
That's okay. Hi, welcome. My name is Mallory Berry, and I am the Executive Administrative Assistant for Dr. Melnick. My favorite beverage in this hot weather would probably be ice water with lots of lemon slices because I love lemon.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. I think that is kind of a fun thing to do, and it helps us get to know each other a little bit better. Just knowing our favorite beverages. Mallory, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Okay. All right. You all should have, along with the agenda, received the minutes, and hopefully everybody had a chance to review those. And so do we have any comments or changes on the minutes? If not, we need a motion and a second to approve the minutes.
Let's move to approve, Tyler.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay, the minutes have been reviewed and approved. Is there any public comment? I don't see anyone from the public on my screen. Did we receive any public comments in any other manner? Okay, well, along with the little get to know you thing that I did during roll call, we started talking about how we really want to get to know each other a little bit better. And when we're meeting on Zoom, it's sometimes hard to get to know each other have a good discussion. And so tonight we'd like to try a little team building activity and a get to know you activity. And so we're going to break it. Mallory's going to open up some work group rooms or breakout rooms, and we'll randomly select put us into a work group or into a breakout room of four or five people. And there's two questions that we want each of us to address in this breakout room. The first one is, what is one role that you play in the community right now? And that could be as a volunteer, through your work, a local board that you sit on, or civic engagement. But just let's try to share with each other a little bit about the roles we play, a role we want to play, we do play in the community that we'd like to share with others, so we can kind of get to know each other a little bit more. So outside of your FAC membership, what kind of a role do you play in the community? And then the second question is what's your biggest public health interest or concern or asset, or what's the biggest public health issue of yours in the community and why? So starting to try to get at some of the interests around what the concerns and assets we have in our community around public health. We'll probably be in these groups for about 8 minutes, so we'll have a good time to share on those two questions. And then we'll come back as a large group, and Mallory will shuffle our names, and we'll be put into new breakout groups, and we'll address those same questions again in the second group. And then we'll come back and maybe share some of the things that we learned about each other. And this activity will take about 20 to 25 minutes. Does anybody have any questions about what we're about to embark on? Everybody's quiet. When we get into small groups, you've got to be a little bit more talkative. All right, I think we're ready to go into our breakout groups, Mallory.
Mallory, I have to take a quick call, okay? And then I'll join the group.
Okay.
I'll join room 5. I can do it, I think.
That sounds great. That's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
we're just getting started.
How did that feel? Was that interesting?
It was quick.
Well, we had Paul's clone in our room because Paul's in here twice, so that was interesting. We thought he's very quiet tonight, but it was just the other Paul.
Just the other Paul. Just well, twin.
We had Paul in ours, and we could hear your group better than we could hear Paul, so.
Oh, you could hear us talking?
Yes.
Oh, no. Paul, you need to fix your setup.
Paul, you may want to sign out and then sign in again once, and that might do the trick. I don't know.
Sorry, Tyler.
All right, Mallory, are you going to put us in our next little breakout groups?
Are you going to pick one or do you want me to sign you? Hey, Paul, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, let me get you assigned to a group. Let me see what I've got open here.
I closed out and I'm back again.
You're perfect now. You aren't echoing at all, so give me just a moment to assign you to a group.
Room one.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Mallory, I had a catastrophic failure. I got the blue screen of death on my computer.
That's okay. Let me get you joined into a group. I'm going to throw you in now.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that, Mallory.
That's okay. Do you want to join a group?
No, I'll have another call here in a few minutes, so...
Okay. That's totally fine. That's good.
Let's start again. Looks like we have one poll, so that's a good thing.
Well, welcome back. I hope everyone enjoyed that little activity of starting to kind of get to know each other and learn a little bit about each other and what our concerns are around public health. Is there anybody who'd like to share anything that they learned about something, someone, or about an issue, or just about the activity itself? I know you weren't this quiet in your small groups.
I'll just say that I really enjoyed it because I realized how many people I don't really know very well. I know some folks, so I felt like it was probably long overdue for something like that. I'm sure a lot of members have changed over the last several months, so I appreciate carving this time out to do this, given that it's always virtual. Maybe we can have something in person one day.
Well, we are meeting in person next month, so we might have some more opportunities. All right, anyone else?
I was just going to say I'm so impressed at the wealth of experience that everyone brings to back. I mean, everyone has just, you know, different wisdom, I think, that they bring to this council, and that's it's just really cool to hear that.
I really liked it. I liked me, like Shauna said, I, you know, we see each other in this big Brady Bunch screen, but we don't get to talk to each other one-on-one, so I thought it was nice.
I also feel like as a new member, I really like to hear everybody's different interests and just get to know everybody. So it's really nice to hear everybody's input.
Right. Well, I was in a group with you, Ashley, and I was enjoying getting to know you a little better as well. So, well, I think it was a great activity, and hopefully we can do a few more of these to bring some more team building spirit to our group. Not that we don't have it already, but I think it makes it easier when we can talk in small groups. So, all right, with no additional comments then, let's move on to our next agenda item, which is around the strategic framework discussion. And I think Dr. Melnick, you're going to introduce this activity.
Yeah, I'm going to have the folks who participated report out, but I'm just going to mention really briefly that several FAC members, I believe there were five of them, including me, so in addition to me, I'm an ex officio, participated in the training. So the State Association of Local Public Health Officials provided 2 days of training in public health training for the new boards of health. You know, the statute changed boards of health as well as changed FAC. The training included some folks from the CDC law program. We talked about public health law as it relates to both at state, federal level, state, as well as local. So there's a lot of training around public health law, which FAC will, you know, needs to understand given the statutes, as well as some of the issues that local boards of health as well as community health boards like FAC are addressing, including the opioid crisis, other flashpoints in public health, and also discuss some leadership roles. So it was a pretty rich conference in terms of the issues discussed and what we learned. I'll let our FAC members report out, those who attended.
I can start. So first of all, it was held at Semiahmoo up by Canada, almost. Like, you could see Canada from our hotel room. Beautiful, beautiful setting, perfect weather. It was glorious. And the conference was very educational. Like Dr. Melnick said, CDC came and talked about kind of where the local board's authority comes from, how state law impacts it, and federal law, and kind of the history around that. So that was really interesting. And they also had us do this activity where we had to pretend like some event happened in our community, and how would we work with the mayor to communicate out about that event? And we talked about, you know, being careful of rumors, addressing them when you need to. It was really good. It was interactive and interesting. It made me think, like, oh, what would we do as a FAC if something like that came up? You know, what would our role be around supporting messaging going out to the community? But anyway, it was good. And I think the piece I enjoyed the most was hanging out with the other FAC members, because I had not met anybody in person. I hadn't even met Dr. Melnick in person. So seeing people in person was really nice. And we got to talk about FAC and ideas for making FAC more interesting, these meetings more interesting. So it was good. And I'll pass it off to Heather or Marla.
This is Heather. I'd be happy to share my insights. I agree with everything Peggy said. It was very good use of our time. It was very very educational. I would say what I came out learning, one of the things that really stuck with me was they were talking about emerging public health issues, and so they did share about opioid and fentanyl deaths and shared data and the crisis response around that. And so really learned that opioid deaths are actually starting to decrease, but fentanyl deaths are increasing. And there's some opioid settlement funding coming to states. And so it was really interesting to see at a state level, you know, having the awareness at the state level of, you know, kind of what the plan is on how those funds are going to be used. And I'm sure that's going to help. So it's nice to see it at a state level, because I'm sure we're going to see this as it trickles down to the county level. It just really all of the talk about substance abuse disorder and some of their strategies really reinforced this, I think, the benefit. Like recently we had the work that we did around the harm reduction for syringe exchange, and a lot of the strategies, it really seems like if we have an established harm reduction centers, that this is a really good place that some of these things can roll out to. So I think it really just reinforces the importance of those programs. And yeah, I would agree. I think that the thing I enjoyed the most was the time spent with the FAC members that I hadn't, again, just like you, have not met in person. So we really got a chance to get to know each other in a very beautiful setting. And I also enjoyed the crisis and risk communication scenarios that we got to play around with. That was very, very well done to give us all time to play with that.
So I'll take a turn now. I really enjoyed the opportunity to be there. It was a pretty intensive training, despite the fact that there was a beautiful location and a lot of times feeling like it'd be great to be outside, but the conversation inside was very compelling, and I found it really interesting. There was a lot of information from various agencies. I felt one of the best things, I would agree with others that have said, the interaction with our own team. And I also met members, Board of Health and Public Health Department employees and other FAC members from other communities. And that was really interesting too, to hear their perspectives. Some of them had been newer into their organizations than I have, and some, you know, not. So it was really an interesting mix. And I thought that the opportunity to just interact one-on-one or in small groups in that situation was very beneficial. I really zeroed in on several of the different topics, but the one that I thought I'd mention is that the criticality of having an engaged workforce, and in fact, even having enough people in your workforce, is getting harder and harder to recruit and retain people that will really engage with your team and want to stay for a long time. And there was a slide that they shared, and this had to do with some of the challenges of keeping people engaged in an organization, and they gave the top five reasons that some public health team members are considering leaving an organization, leaving their organization, and they included work overload or burnout. That was the highest number of the respondents. And then the next was stress, the next organizational climate and culture, the next was lack of opportunities for advancement, and the final one was pay. And on the other side of that, the top five reasons that people would want to stay in their organization are benefits, which are can be very, very good, job stability, flexibility, job satisfaction, and pride in the organization and its mission. And they talked a lot about what kinds of things would lead a person to actually leave their public health department and go somewhere else. And one of the big draws is to get into public health at the state level. And then they gave some series of recommendations for how local public health departments can recruit and retain their good workers that they have. And I really was struck by the importance of this issue, because it really takes great people to create and sustain a great organization. So I think that we have a wonderful team here in Clark County. I'm very grateful for that, and hope that we can continue to the work that we do can in some way help and encourage the employees that carry on their public health duties every day.
I don't, it doesn't look like Elmar or Michelle have joined us yet. There were just two other staff members who attended, and we're gonna share some ways. I was also there, and we can make all of the slide deck materials available to staff if anyone's interested. So the workforce study that Marla just mentioned that was done at the state level, we can send out, but also the CDC. Really, really kind of interesting. I felt like Law School 101 for a full day. We can send out those slides and materials, and I'm sure any staff or faculty member interested in like talking to any of them would be happy to sit down for that. And I wanted to see, Dr. Melnick, if you had any reflections or things you learned. But I'll just say, for me, from a staff perspective, there was a round table that happened where we got to sit as community health staff and talk to other boards of health and staff members from around the state. And I just found it fascinating to hear how others use their resources and time to support community health policy and practice, and how they kind of structure their staff and their board of health and how that partnership works. And our board of health looks a little different than another county because of the legislation. And so just hearing what processes people have in place and how they make that work for the betterment of the health of the community was really valuable here as a staff. Dr. Miller, anything you want to add?
Yeah, the other thing I heard is that, and some of our FAC members basically asked the question is, there may be an opportunities down the road to bring that training here, including the CDC public health law partners. So that's something, you know, if FAP wanted to consider that, we can certainly look at potentially doing that.
And they do this, LaSalle hosted, this is the second time they've done this kind of statewide training, and my understanding is they'll do it annually, so this won't be the only opportunity to. Does anyone have any questions for folks who attended, or Marla, thank you, or Heather, if you want to share that?
I was just wondering if there's any specific recommendations from all of the training that might specifically apply to us. Maybe it's too soon.
What do you think?
Well, one thought I have is, I thought that the information about really creating a healthy, sustainable workforce was something that could be important to any organization, especially in today's environment. And I think that there were some recommendations that came out of that work, and that might be something that our public health team is able to talk about and discuss. And there were some other recommendations. That was the one I kind of put my thoughts together to bring to this meeting. But I think that's a great question, and that would be a good thing for us to ponder, because that was a very valuable educational opportunity, and it would really be a shame if we don't take home some of the things that we learned and some of the recommendations that we heard, and at least just look them over and say, is this something that could work for us here?
We also talked about how cool it would be to have our own like retreat with FAC members and the Board of Health, so that everybody hears all the information and learns together, and we all meet each other and know each other. And, you know, I think if the Board of Health hung out with us, maybe they'd have more, you know, it would build trust and a better relationship. So I think we kind of threw around the idea of where could we hold a similar event, only just for Clark County. So that would be my personal recommendation.
And I think it was to bring the Board of Health together with FAC. And yeah. I think, if I remember correctly, really go over what we learned at that training and talk about what we could do together post, you know, the statute changing and the new statute around FAC, what it could look like in terms of how FAC works together with the Board of Health, given that new statute. I think there was also some learnings around the risk communication training. I don't know how we may want to share that information with FAC as well.
Yeah, we can make all those slide decks available and to the Board of Health too.
But if we were to do something like that with the Board of Health, theoretically we could bring the CDC public health law folks here to help with that as well.
That sounds great. I think it would have to be, you know, for the entire Board of Health to meet. It's a public meeting, but there's ways that we could notice that to make it work. And I think I would agree that it'd be great to have more of a informal give and take between the FAC and the Board of Health. And just on the sustainable organizations, and I know countywide we are in the midst of a salary survey, and so I don't know exactly how that would impact the public health employees, but I would imagine that you're all part of that, because it's been recognized that countywide there's been difficulty attracting and retaining employees, because we're not as competitive as neighboring jurisdictions. So that's something that's coming up.
That's actually a national discussion. I was just on a panel today with the National Association of County and City Health Officials talking about challenges in terms of workforce, including recruitment and retention.
Any other questions? I think that we will continue to revisit the content from this training, but are there any other questions that folks have? Can you hear me okay? Mallory just said I'm really quiet. I'll speak as loud as I can. My neighbor's dog ate my earbud, so I can't. I'm yelling into my laptop right now. And I will replace it eventually. Okay, so what we have guests joining us, some public health staff, in about 15 minutes. So for this chunk of time, what I wanted to do was kind of transitioning from that conversation and sort of next steps, review for everyone what we've done in 2023 so far, and kind of we've done several different kinds of brainstorms at past meetings, and you're probably like, what's happening with that? So I want to talk a little bit about that, and then also things to be considering for June meeting, which is going to be in person, and I don't think we have a location yet. But I know that folks have been in and out, and welcome back, Aru. We haven't met, but I wanted to be able to share kind of where some of those things are headed. And I'm sorry if you hear a bathtub and bathtub toddler voice out there. I got to get a new headphone. Okay, so So just a quick recap. We didn't meet in January, which I think is typical, but in February, this group had the opportunity to explore the baseline equity assessment. So if you were a FACT member at the end of last year, you participated in a survey, the same survey that public health staff and the Board of Health was invited to complete. And so we reviewed some of those results and talked about ideas for how to build our anti-racist equity muscles as a group and what that might look like. And part of that discussion was reviewing a draft advocacy decision tool. And you also approved some bylaw revisions in February. Then in March, we took a bit of a step back and realized we needed to talk a little bit more around kind of the FACT purpose and role. And again, we were in smaller groups sort of brainstorming, like, what could this work look like? What would we be doing if we were doing it totally wrong? And what kind of results do we want to see? Do we want the community to be talking about in 5 years as a result of FACT's work now? And then also at the March meeting, there was an opportunity presented to actually test that decision tool, and that's where the Syringe Service Program Harm Reduction Center conversation started. An ad hoc group of you met in April to really pilot that tool, and as a result made a recommendation to the full FACT at our April meeting to submit a letter as part of the presentation, and Sandy attended the Board of Health meeting the following morning and read that letter as part of the public health presentation on the Syringe Service Program, and there were some learnings from that process, and then we're here tonight doing a little bit of group debrief and learning together and talking about opportunities like the CDC public health law training, you know, opportunities to learn together as FACT. So all of these activities are informing some process or a decision point or ways that we're going to kind of help structure over the course of this next year a FACT strategy or strategic plan or strategic framework, whatever you want to call it. Something that's less formal than your bylaws, but more kind of like, what is it that we're going to focus on as a group? And so the equity assessment might inform some kind of shared training and or ways that we talk about how we recruit and retain membership on the committee and make and reduce barriers to participating as a FACT member. So those are conversations happening in the membership committee. They might talk a little bit more about that tonight. Decision-making procedures, what came up at the local Board of Health training among your FACT colleagues was Robert's rules, and is that really the best way to make decisions as a body, and do we want to consider alternatives? So again, the bylaws committee is going to bring that up a little bit later tonight too. And then, you know, kind of what training opportunities do we want to have as a group, a potential retreat. So all of these notes and conversations that you've been having are going to be feeding into kind of these areas of work moving forward. So what I want you to do for the next couple of minutes is kind of thinking about what we've already done and kind of what we're learning about each other and the ways that we show up in the community outside of FACT and our kind of expertise that we bring to FACT. I want you to be thinking about between now and June, when we're going to meet in person, what does meaningful engagement look like to you, and what support do you need personally to be meaningfully engaged on FACT, and what roles are you interested in to support the work of FACT? And so in June, we're going to talk a little bit about the committees and what they do and what they could do, and kind of who's interested in what, and if there's not a clear role on a committee, what are you interested in working on as a FACT member, if you have the capacity. Of course, you're all volunteer, and we appreciate all of your time. And then the other kind of group mindset, put your group hat on now, is what areas of training and development are you interested in for your FACT group? And then what support does FACT need to review and recommend public health policies and priorities? What do you feel like this body needs over the next year to build that muscle to play that role with the Board of Health? send out these slides and prompts so that you can be thinking, and you have a whole month to marinate on these thoughts, so that in June when we come together in person, we'll kind of have an agenda to help do these group discussions in our face-to-face setting. Does that sound good to folks? Okay.
It sounds great, Haley.
And for new members, Ashley, or for members who weren't at a February or March meeting and want to see, kind of, we have, you know, archived all the jam boards with the discussions that have been happening, in fact, so we can share, you know, past resources and links if you missed them. But then kind of on the sidelines, we're starting to synthesize that into a sort of the strategic framework that FAC can use and reflect on and work together on. Moving forward. Okay. All right. I think that we're trying to see has Melissa popped on?
Yes, I see. I think I see her name.
I'm here. Next, we can start a few minutes early.
Great.
If you're ready to go.
I'm ready. Okay. Do you want me to introduce the topic there, Melissa?
Sure.
All right. Well, at our last meeting, we talked about how we wanted to kind of know about what was coming up, a preview, if you will, about topics that are coming up at our next Board of Health meetings. And so we kind of reviewed that last time when we were doing the syringe services thing, our project last time. And the Board of Health meeting tomorrow is going to be talking about Raising Clark County Project. And the Life Force team with Melissa Martin is going to take some time to share with us their work and what they're going to be talking with to the Board of Health with, to kind of give us a head start on the topic for their meeting tomorrow. So I want to welcome Melissa. It's good to see your face again.
Good to see you.
And I'm just going to turn it over to you and your team.
Terrific. Thanks, Sandy. Uh-huh. I'm going to give you a full preview of what we're going to cover tomorrow. So thanks for this opportunity to share about this project. I'm Melissa Martin. I'm the Life Course Program Manager on the Healthy Communities team. We're just going to walk through our Raising Clark County project. I want to take a minute to introduce Kelly Wantontabe, who is here and one of our newer team members. And she's our Family Initiatives Coordinator. She's our project lead, and so she'll be available if there's questions at the end too to field with you all. Go ahead and go to the next slide. I actually also want to recognize before I talk about our objectives that Andrea Pruitt and Haley Pickus have been super instrumental in the development of this project and leading these project efforts as well. So I would be remiss if I didn't recognize both of them as well. So for today, I'm going to promote a shared understanding of the critical window of development that happens in childhood. I'm really focusing on those, the birth to age five. We're going to introduce the Raising Clark County Project, including the data collection efforts and some key findings. And I want to emphasize the role that local policymakers can play in supporting the well-being of children and families. This is a really robust project, and it literally has engaged all of our team. So I want to take a minute to recognize them. This shows our Life Course team. We work to address the social, economic, and physical environments that impact our health. The Life Course theory, if you're not familiar, I think some of you might be through Foundational Public Health Services, but it studies the impact of the social and environment conditions across each stage of life and how they build an influence on the next stage. So thinking from pregnancy to infancy to childhood, adolescence, and into adulthood. We have a really amazing team of dedicated staff working hard to build healthy and resilient communities in Clark County. And as I mentioned, this was an investment from our foundational public health dollars, from our state public health infrastructure funding, and we were recently able to add a couple of positions. So Kelly is new to our team, as well as Amy Koski, who's working on our built environment work. And then next slide is our health assessment and evaluation team, which is kind of our partners in our healthy communities team. They have been very instrumental in collecting and analyzing the data and helping us develop the surveys as part of Raising Clark County. We work with them on a whole host of projects, but this has been one where we've really been aligned all the way through, and we'll continue to work with them as we launch into the next phases. So we embarked on this Raising Clark County project after more than 10 years of community education and capacity building around adverse childhood experiences. So this is not new work to us. It's really building on prior work that we had been doing. The ACES research, in case you're not familiar, is born out of a landmark study that revealed a really powerful relationship between serious negative events that happen in children's lives, and it impacts those people into their physical and mental health status into adulthood. So an example of ACEs is when a child experiences abuse or neglect, their bodies are flooded with stress hormones, and it puts them at an increased risk later in life for problems like heart disease, diabetes, and depression. So these early experiences affect the development of the brain and impacting all future learning, behavior, and health. And so those first few years of life are a critical window to build up our brain's architecture, providing a strong foundation for the rest of the child's life. And then on the parent side, severe and persistent stress can overload their ability to manage emotions and their capacity to provide responsive and attentive care to their children. So preventing ACEs, we've really discovered, takes a two-generation approach. So knowing this, there's been a lot of research since that landmark study conducted on how we build up these resilient brains and help our children reach their fullest potential. And this is really best done through programs and policies aimed at both generations. The graphic we're looking at here is from the Harvard Center of the Developing Child, and it shows sort of these three principles that are based on science that can guide the development of these policies and programs that improve outcomes for children. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about each of them. So supportive and responsive relationships is the most important factor in building sturdy brain architecture and building a foundation for resiliency. So when adults' responses to children's are unpredictable or unreliable, inappropriate, or just simply absent, the developing brain circuits are disrupted, and they affect how the child learns, how they solve problems, and relate to others. And then we know that a parent's ability to build and spend quality time with children is impacted by their ability to meet their own basic needs and stable access to services and support. So an example of like a policy level approach to build relationship and promote bonding is paid leave. It's a really great example of how we can nurture strong relationships between the parent, the caregiver, and the child. Reducing stress is another pillar, and this really talks about the financial and speaks to the psychological and institutional resources that are accessible to the family, their ability to purchase goods and services, their physical and mental health, and their child-rearing skills. So supportive structures like parks, schools, childcare, and after-school programs, those are all things that can play a really critical role in reducing stress for families. Another example is living wage jobs is really instrumental in reducing stress for families. And then strengthening core skills is also very important. And this speaks to the caregiver's education, their training, their interactions with child-related professionals, and personal experiences that affect their capacity to support children. And it also is, as a community, how we build supportive systems and structures that work for children and family. A great example of this that many of us probably are familiar with are Early Head Start, and ECAP, the Early Education Assistance Programs. Those programs focus on building skills of the kids, but also focus on building skills of parents. The graphic really highlights the need for our communities to shore up the ways that we support families by adopting policies and programs that funnel stress away from the families, and they prevent ACEs from happening in the first place. So we had really started thinking about how, like, that we needed to start focusing on this with our ACEs work, and then the pandemic hit, and that just really hit home and brought to light the realities of working families and the fragmented and frail systems that support them. And so we really leaned in to looking more upstream, and we felt like we really needed to hear directly from Clark County families about their unique experiences raising children in our community. And that's where this project kind of launched us into the project. Next slide. So here are the different phases. Phase one happened almost on accident. There was an opportunity from the state Department of Health, because they were providing funding to local jurisdictions who were ready and interested in assessing the local landscape for policies and programs that prevent child abuse and neglect and promote family resiliency. So this really launched us into this work, and we were required to document local programs and policies and services of specifically looking at birth to five. So it aligned really nicely with what we were already thinking about doing in terms of our Raising Clark County project. So in this phase, we looked at what was universally available to families, what programs and policies impacted families that are at high risk, and then which ones were available to families in crisis. And through interviewing over 47 health and service providers working directly with families, we learned that most of our supports focused on families in crisis and or at that at-risk level, and that we have very few primary prevention, those universally available programs available to families. And then we also learned, while we have some really wonderful they're called tertiary and secondary prevention strategies. So the ones that really reach the families in crisis or at risk, those programs, we have some great ones in Clark County, but the system of support is complex and the needs are great and the resources are strained. So we have some really great opportunities to build out those programs, but we don't have enough of them. So that's a snapshot of phase one. For phase two, you can go to the next slide if you want, Haley. Phase two really focused on centering the family voice. So we wanted to hear directly from families about the pressures that they were facing, the needs that they have, and also like their hopes and dreams regarding how their children, raising children in Clark County. So during this phase, we developed a short 5-question open-ended qualitative survey for pregnant and parenting individuals and families in Clark County with children, and we aligned it with that 0 to 5 age group, just knowing about that critical window. And we wanted to learn directly from them what's working, what's not working for them. And then to ensure that the responses were representative of our community, we did some specific outreach to caregivers and parents of children with special needs, non-English speaking parents, parents and caregivers of children in subsidized daycare programs, and families living along the Fourth Plank Corridor in Central Vancouver. We also co-designed the survey with community-based organizations to make sure that it was relevant and reached communities of color. The survey was available in 10 different languages. So we really relied on our network of partner organizations, including partners like SELF and EOCF, to carry out the data collection on this project. The intentional outreach and collaboration with partners allowed us to collect data and from caregivers in every zip code in the county, from across all income levels and all sorts of family structures. And in the end, we were able to analyze 604 responses from the surveys, and either through paper surveys, online, phone interviews, or focus group. And we received like some amazing, rich responses from caregivers who graciously shared their experiences of raising kids in Clark County. And we're actively right now working on developing a dozen issue briefs that will summarize some key themes that were identified in the survey. And I'm just gonna highlight a couple of them for you today. So economics security, this is probably not a surprise to any of you, but over and over again, families in Clark County express that they are stressed about their finances and economic instability is a top concern. So survey respondents describe things that about the mismatch, the affordability mismatch between what families earn and the cost of living in Clark County. And they describe situations like having to decide between paying for food or child care. Or many of them expressed that they were debating staying home at the expense of their career advancement or their ability to grow their family because of the cost of child care. Housing and child care were the two major expenses that were just like repeatedly mentioned by respondents. They were just causing a lot of stress and strain on family budgets and their well-being. We can go to the next slide. Child care. So child care, and then also a lot of folks brought up K-12 educational system. So I'm going to speak to that just a little bit here. But just like all across the country, the child care system in Clark County is frail, and families express multiple challenges trying to access child care, especially those that really met their needs. This included accessibility, availability, reliability came up a lot, quality and safety, and but especially affordability. The lack of feasible options is impacting the workforce in Clark County. And then in both early learning settings and the K-12 system, parents expressed concerns about safety in schools, mental health supports, class sizes, and low teacher retentions were some other concerns related to educational settings. On a positive note, educational settings came up a lot, especially staff were mentioned and school resources were mentioned as really valuable assets when we asked them what's working well in Clark County. So people said a lot of great things about the resources available through either childcare or the K-12 system. And seem to like their educators as well. The next slide, please. Resource access was another one that came up and was a key theme. So parents don't know what services exist and where to even look for services. And when we're talking about resource access, I'm talking about things like paid family leave, housing support, mental health support, and when they find them or they're referred to them, they also expressed that accessing the service is really confusing and that the application processes are really difficult and often delay needed services. So that was definitely a challenge that came up from several respondents. So this complex system is overloaded and navigating it is very challenging. And so really they expressed a need for more care coordination to streamline the process and to ensure that services are being accessed. And this was really compounded for non-English speaking residents or caregivers. On a positive note, again, once folks were able to connect with services, they expressed being really happy with either the providers or the programs. It was just that so many people also mentioned having a really tough time accessing the services. And then next slide. So this is all magnified for parents and caregivers of children with special health care needs. They need more resources and face even more challenges navigating and accessing services that really impact their child's health, their development, their learning, and well-being. And care coordination is, they express that care coordination is lacking, and it often falls on the parents, and it can literally become like a full-time job. Caring for a child with special health care needs. And then child care and affordability were issues that were really compounded for this group as well. Next slide. So we are excited to be in phase three right now and to let you know that the briefs, these issue briefs, will be coming online in the weeks to come. So we'll have them posted on our website. And this next phase of our project will include sharing these findings with our community partners, engaging with our community around priorities and solutions, and researching policies that really meet the specific needs identified by Clark County families. Go to the next slide. So I'm going to kind of wrap up here with our prevention pyramid. This is a visual that outlines all the levels of support that are needed to prevent child maltreatment and that interrupt the cycles of abuse. And here you can see the three levels of prevention. I talked a little bit about these earlier. So that tertiary prevention at the top represents the focus on families where maltreatment has already occurred. And this is fewer of our population are receiving these services or impacted by these policies. But they're important because they do help mitigate the impact of abuse and they can prevent reoccurrence. So all levels of the prevention pyramid are important. The secondary, the middle of our pyramid here is called secondary prevention. These are those programs that I spoke to earlier that are for high-risk populations. And these reach some families, but not all. Many of you are familiar with our home visiting NFP program. That's a great example of a secondary prevention program. And we need more of those, but they do reach more than that tertiary level. So in phase one, again, in our phase one of the Raising Clark County project, we really learned that we have some really strong and successful secondary and tertiary prevention programs in place. They're in high demand and often don't meet the needs of the community because of limited capacity, but we have value programs that are ready to expand. However, we found that we have very few prevention programs supporting our families at the primary prevention level that are available to everyone and really instrumental in preventing maltreatment before it occurs. These are so critical because they help all children reach their fullest potential and support that healthy brain development and that strong foundation so that kids are ready to be successful in school, the workplace, and in the larger community. So we're super excited to work with our community to expand these primary prevention strategies in Clark County and put this research into practice so our children are resilient and our families thrive. That's what I have for you today. But I'm happy to entertain any questions or hear feedback or whatever you... Looks like Peggy has a question.
Thanks, Melissa. That was amazing. I'm wondering, so this, all of this work, is it leading to recommendations for more primary prevention measures? And if so, is there funding? What's that look like? What do primary prevention efforts look like, and how do we get more of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, that is really the real goal of our project is to get our community to prioritize some primary prevention strategy and do the next phase is really researching what with community, what policies will match the needs. So there's a whole host of primary universal child care is one that actually tomorrow Rika Strong and Debbie Ham, Rika from EOCF and Debbie Ham will be talking about the child care crisis with me tomorrow at the Board of Health and some momentum that is occurring around universal access to early, child care, 0 to 5. So there's a lot of interest in our community around that. It certainly came up in our survey. So that's a great example. But yeah, and then we're going to be working. We have a team working on children with special health care needs. This work is really going to inform our work with our partners on how we do better care system coordination for system of care coordination for those families. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. I was also going to mention, and maybe you've heard of this, DCYF has a pilot now where they're trying to prevent families from coming into being involved with child welfare. And they have navigators that kind of hold parents' hands through that process. You know, one of those quotes talked about how it's so confusing and there's so many different and I don't know if Region 6, if we have a navigator in this area. I know they have one in Spokane, but anyway, it just goes along with everything you're saying that having somebody to really walk parents through that very complicated process is good.
Yes, that, and how do we have, and how can the system itself help? You know, there are, while people are in the doctor's office, you know, helping connect and have follow through on referrals and kind of that closed loop referral system and whatnot. Like, how can we develop systems in our infrastructure around families too to really support that? But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of synergy around this. I mean, the research is robust, so and families are stressed, so there's a lot of work ahead of us. But luckily, we have really good examples. Haley's mentioned. Yeah, I see your chat there, Haley. That we can send out a short paper that was sent to the Board of Health that complements a lot of and shares a lot of examples of the policies that can support families. Any other questions, or Kelly, or Haley, or Andrea, do you want to add anything?
Drew, did you have a question? I said, no. Mute.
Oh, yes, thank you. So, Melissa, that was a great presentation, and I love the slide deck and also the paper that Haley referenced. And I also love the idea of the primary prevention. I was also going to say, just even the resources that are available now in the community, I think there is just such a lack of understanding of even what's available. And I think just even like education for care providers, I mean, parents and other caregivers, but also I think on like the care provider side. So like, you know, going to a pediatrician, for example, and your pediatrician or someone who works with your pediatrician being knowledgeable about here's what's available and here's where we can refer you. Because I think that is also a place where I think there's a lot of gaps in the system. And so, and I know this because my son was in the NICU for 2 weeks and the NICU was fantastic. You know, they said, we're going to send you all these referrals for early intervention and they're going to call you and it was great. But then I thought, I mean, the only reason I know of any of these resources is because someone told me that and because my son was in the NICU. But as like a doctor myself, I never knew that these resources existed. So I think that's also like a big gap that I see right now in the system. And I think that education around that, I don't know what's the best way to reach, you know, everyone, but I think that would be like so helpful just to have then be able to provide guidance for parents around what is available right now.
Yeah, 100%. You are echoing what we heard from families over again, and from in that phase one, other providers recognize there's those gaps too. So we are hearing that consistently. And there is a body of work. I mean, not only is that part of our work ahead of us with our children and youth special healthcare needs work, but also there's SELF has a regional collaborative that is looking at how do we develop exactly what you're talking about. How do we make those resources available to folks? How do we make the accessing them and navigating that process as easy as possible? Because again, people are strapped for time. They are, it's confusing. It's hard to navigate. And so yeah, I think in order for it to be as useful as possible and have as much impact, we really need to make it an easier system for folks to navigate. So appreciate your comment. And it was definitely, we heard that over and over again. Michael, I see your hand up.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to, I guess, ask the question of how are you kind of outreaching to communities of color, like the Native community, that might not utilize mainstream services?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We went to SWEC to present initially on the South Haley, help me with what's WIC.
Southwest Coalition.
Yes, thank you. We initially went and presented and asked for, wanted to get input and partnerships with SWAC. We also had some existing partners with, we worked with PICWA and the NAACP, the Vietnamese Association in Clark County. We should have all these, right? Yeah, thank you for Pacific Islander Association of Southwest Washington was a core partner. The Pacific Islander Health Board partnered with us. So that's where we did, we also worked with our regional collaborative, and we had some representatives from the Latinx community on that helped promote the survey in their community, and then the Cowlitz tribe, we did reach out to a couple to a partner who was working on, and we actually had good, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can share, we can share those with you, Michael. We didn't have an opportunity to co-design with the Cowlitz tribe the survey, which we had made available to the partner that we had been working with through our regional collaborative, but we did have good representation from people who identified as Native American on our on the survey. So we're really interested, though, in this next phase. There's opportunities to bring that the information back with the communities, and we have existing partnerships to do that. So I mean, with PICWA, we're actually developing a brief with in partnership with the Pacific Islander community, really focused on the responses of their community in partnership with them. So that's kind of our next phase, is looking, bringing it back to communities and say, what does this resonate with you? You know, really, like, does this resonate to you? What does this mean for you and your community, and what next? So that's kind of the work ahead of us.
Oh, Melissa, that was a really good overview of what you guys have been working on for a number of years, and it's got a lot of great outcomes and information. So I'm really anxious to see where it goes from here. So good job for you and all your teams that you've been working with. So
yeah, it's been lots of hands, many hands make light work. Is that what? But it's been a big project. It's not light work, but it's but we've had luckily many hands helping us with this work. So.
You get to represent the great work.
And thank you for those great questions. I appreciate it. And we're please, we are any, if there is interest in engaging in the next phase, we're really interested in working with community. That's the most important part of this project, is bringing it back to the community and finding the solutions with community and having solutions led by the community. So I'm pleased. Contact me if you're interested in engaging more in the next phase.
Well, I'm interested in seeing where it goes, and I think that I'll speak for fact that I think we're all interested in hearing what the next steps are, and if there's anything that we can do to support the work or engage in the work in some way, keep us posted on that. And great. I wish you good luck tomorrow in your presentation with the Board of Health.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions or comments before we move on? Thanks, Melissa. Okay, the next agenda item is some updates from the FAC. The first one is an executive committee report. Basically, I just kind of want to report from the Board of Health meeting that was held last month on the syringe services program. And I'll speak first, and anybody else that was at that meeting wants to speak up, they sure can. I thought it was a really great presentation. It was it had quite a great panel that had a lot of information and data around syringe services, and I think it really supported the work that was
is being done in the community. At the end, as was indicated, I did read the letter from FAC that supported the syringe services work in the community. And I thought it was a good presentation and fairly well received. There were lots of comments from the public regarding the services and that were being held in the county. But I thought it was a really good background. I'm not clear about where that conversation went afterwards, and maybe Councilman Marshall can help follow up a little bit on that if there's any information on that. But is there anybody else that was at that meeting that wanted to speak to how that went? Right, hearing
none. Chief Maury was there, and I really appreciate his comments.
I was happy to help out.
Yeah, I think it was really a good presentation. So I really enjoyed tonight's presentation about what's coming up at the next Board of Health meeting, and so I'm hoping that we can continue to do that. I think it really makes us understand what's being moved forward with the Board of Health and what issues they're discussing as well.
Right. If I could just make a couple of comments, I thought the presentation at the last Board of Health meeting was excellent. It seemed to me that, I thought it was going to be really just focused on the syringe program, but I think the Board of Health is interested more broadly and concerned about the fentanyl and just all of that that's going on in the community. And I felt like there were a lot of questions that came up that maybe might deserve a follow-up presentation to talk about really the whole drug issue and what's being done about that. And related to the syringes, the other thing that seemed to come up was as much, I think, a concern about hazardous waste and the litter of the needles, not just associated with exchanging it. And, you know, I think the misconception that it's encouraging drug use was that concern about litter and making sure that this hazardous waste is not out in the public arena. So those were just some of my takeaways. And I don't know really about a follow-up. There really wasn't any discussion about follow-up really that I can recall.
I agree. I think there was a lot of conversation around other things around the syringe, like the litter issues, or is it encouraging more drug use in our community, and how is that going to help reduce drugs in our community? And so it kind of went broader than what the initial topic was. So
yeah, and I was a little dismayed. It seemed like there was a lot of questioning about the studies and the data that was presented, and, you know, when they were done or that they were too old. I don't know. It just seemed like they got rather picky about things.
Well, and as just in our last presentation, to collect that kind of data over time and really have it be substantive data, it takes time. And so you can't have like yesterday's data on hand right away. So, and I think people sometimes don't understand that.
Yeah, and I also think there's some things that really don't change related to blood-borne diseases and things like that. That's, you know, needles are a vector for that, and that is what it is.
We followed up with, pointed out that some of the references that were originally presented had more recent, and we followed up with some more material for them as well. I think you received those as well, Councilor Marshall.
Yes, I did, and thank you for that. I thought that was really great follow-up.
I thought it went well, and I'm anxious to hear the presentation tomorrow as well. So,
right, and it's the presentation that I got a preview of looks fabulous.
Get an inside look. Yep. All right, Jeff, do you have any updates on the budget committee?
I sent an email earlier today asking for times when the budget subcommittee would be available. I needed to apologize for the significant delay. We were delayed in getting data from the budget office, and as when I got the data, the first view of the budget was not what I was anticipating. So I'm really trying to navigate the timing between notifying a meeting with staff and meeting with the budget subcommittee. It's our first time going through the full process with FACS, so hopefully we can meet first week of June. I'm trying to find time that works for everybody.
Peggy, do you want to update us on what's going on with the bylaws committee?
Sure. We had a discussion, this happened at the conference, where some of the FAC members who attended that conference talked about when they first came into a FAC meeting, especially if they didn't have a background in meetings using Robert's Rules of Order, that it was a little bit intimidating, kind of confusing. They weren't really sure what's going on. That led to this deeper discussion about how Robert's Rules of Order is not the most inclusive way to hold meetings and come to, you know, to make decisions. And so we discussed the idea of looking at other opportunities or processes for making decisions aside from Robert's Rules of Order that would be more inclusive and make people more comfortable. So we wanted to have kind of a bigger discussion with FAC around that. And I think Haley had some ideas for, you know, there are other ways to do it. We don't have to use Robert's Rules of Order. And if we can come up, if we can use one of those other ways, I think that would be good. So I'm not sure where we landed, if we're talking about that in the June meeting. Haley, do you remember what we ended up saying?
I think that the bylaws committee and anyone else on FAC who's interested was going to try to meet before June to review some alternative.
Okay.
And then at the meeting, have a discussion with the full FAC about ideas or a recommendation, or we think we should stick with Robert's Rules. Right. So if anyone's interested in joining the bylaws committee in that initial sort of review of other decision making processes and how you implement them, let Sandy know, and we will get that group together before the June meeting.
Either myself or Mallory, just
or
let
Mallory.
Either one of us know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be a discussion item for our June meeting, but we wanted to kind of give people a heads up about the topic. Michelle is going to report on membership and nominations, but I don't think Michelle joined us. That committee is working on, we talked about membership and what are barriers to people being members of FAC or participating, and how do we go, what are some different ways to recruit? And so that will be an agenda item for that committee to talk about opportunities to reduce barriers, like do we need to help with childcare, or are there other things that are barriers to some people for joining the group? Is the time of the meeting awkward? Is there a barrier for them in that time, and do we need to look at that? And then how do we go about recruiting, you know, a more diverse committee? And so those will be topics that the membership committee will be talking about. And I don't know if it'll be on the agenda for the next meeting or not, but that is a work in progress for that committee. And if anybody's interested in joining the committee, we surely welcome you to the committee for sure. Are there any other updates that we missed?
Just briefly, there's a vacancy for a veterinarian member of FAC. And we're in the process of recruiting. Dr. Fairbanks resigned recently. I think we might have mentioned that at a previous FAC meeting. So we're in the process of recruiting for veterinarian representative.
Great.
you all know anybody, send them our way.
All right. Well, speaking of the next meeting, our next meeting is going to be on June 27th, and this is the one we decided to try to be in person. So we are going to have an in-person meeting on June 27th. The location is still to be determined. We've had a couple of ideas, and most of them have not worked yet. But we will have, guaranteed we'll have a location by June 27th, and we'll be letting you know that. The question is, these meetings have been from 5:30 to 7:30. When we've met before in person, they've been 5:30 to 8:30. So I'm assuming we're going to do that same thing. I need some guidance on that.
I would vote for 5:30 to 7:30.
Okay. All right.
And again, thinking people at the in-person meeting?
Yeah, we had an hour where we had the dinner, and then the meetings were 6:30 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. So, well, the executive board will be discussing it, but we'll try to keep it to 5:30 to 7:30, and we don't want to extend the time at this point when we're doing our first face-to-face meeting. The tentative agendas for that meeting are going to be looking at the various committee works, imagining what the work needs to be done, and we've already got a bylaws and a membership and a finance committee, but are there other groups, committees that we need to have that might work on special projects or different things that FAC is working on that we need to have smaller groups to do some preliminary work and then come back and have a broader conversation with FAC. So we'll be bringing forth some of those ideas along with what are their goals and missions and what's their project, and then possibly planning a retreat for this year. And this is something that came out of that meeting up at Simiyama. I can't ever say that name, but the meeting that was up north near the Canadian border was to have a retreat for FAC. And because we've been on Zoom for so long, and again, we're starting to want to learn more about our FAC members, that a retreat might be something that's beneficial to all of us. So there'll be a conversation about maybe planning an in-person retreat. And then, as Peggy had said, we'll discuss the issue around Robert's rules and whether that's the most effective decision-making method for FAC. And we'll bring some proposals forth, and we'll have some conversations around that. So once again, as usual, we have a full agenda and a nice, robust things to have a conversation around. And I'm really excited about where the group is moving to as well. So on that note, is there anything else for anybody that wants to give us an update, has an announcement? Anything you want to share with us before our June meeting? Again, I want to welcome Ashley. I hope you found this meeting informative and interesting. And I'm anxious to meet you and everyone else at our meeting in June. It's been much too long since we've met face-to-face.
Thank you so much. It really was informative. I learned a lot.
Great. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, then we will adjourn, and I'll see everyone in June.
Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.